Hello and welcome to this podcast episode. Today I talk about our own healing journey with our horse. But first, please allow me to briefly introduce myself. My name is Britta and I am a coach for peaceful togetherness between people and horses, and also people and people. Please let me invite you with this episode to start your own unique journey and to discover your horse, yourself, and your relationship completely new, and to create your own authentic way of peaceful togetherness with your horse. I'm super happy that you're listening to this episode, and I hope you will find it interesting. For many of us, there comes a time where we start to ask ourselves the difficult questions, where we are no longer willing or able to cope with everything that life or other people ask of us. And living in the current times even accelerated this process for many people. We ponder what we really want from our life, what's really important to us, and sometimes we then notice that we don't do enough of what we actually enjoy, or that we made compromises in our lives that no longer work for us, or that these don't contribute to our happiness. Be it regarding our jobs, our partner, other people in our lives, the places where we live, or how we train our horses. But still, we repeat the old thought and behavior patterns because they worked somewhat okay for us before, and change can be scary. So we ignore these rare or not so rare glimpses of doubt or discomfort and move on. Do what we have always done. Somehow and sometime things will change. Or don't they? What if they don't? Is there something we could do to get out of the hamster wheel? Yes, there is something. We can take the responsibility for our life back and start our own healing process, step by step. And healing starts with awareness. Awareness that there is a need in us, something that needs healing. To feel into this, we can, for example, do guided meditations. But for some, that doesn't work and they prefer to approach this part of the journey cognitively. In that case, you could start a journal and write down a couple questions and then answer them. You could then either answer the questions all at once or over a period of a couple days or weeks. Nothing else, just an inventory list of what's there and how you feel about it. That could be questions like, how do I treat myself? Do I allow myself to make mistakes? Am I doing a lot of things I enjoy, or do I rush through my day working through my to-do list? Or how do I talk with myself? Am I loving, gentle, and forgiving to myself? Am I okay with everything I feel? Do I support myself even more than my best friend would? Or do I criticize and put myself down for things I should do better or that I haven't done? And then, how do I talk with or treat other people? Do I understand and accept their world? Do I understand their needs? And is it okay for them to express them to me? Can I set clear boundaries? And also, how do other people talk to me? How do they treat me? With kindness and respect? Do they accept my no and understand that I just fulfill my own needs when I say no? These are some of the questions, and if you're happy with the answers to these and similar questions, and you always treat yourself and others with the utmost kindness while being able to set your boundaries very well, then wonderful. There's nothing to do but to enjoy your life to the fullest with all the great relationships you have. But if there's just one thing, maybe you don't like how you talk to yourself or how others treat you, then maybe this is a time where you can gently ask yourself if life is maybe calling you to go on a journey. This journey will, of course, look different for everyone, depending on who we are and what experiences we made. However, I find that a good start is to understand first how all these thoughts, behaviors, and relationship patterns developed in the first place. I personally am a big fan of the attachment-based approach and have studied this intensively. I can, of course, just give a glimpse into it, and maybe you're already familiar with parts of it. In a nutshell, our sense for ourselves and for relationships with other people often come from early childhood experiences, namely within the first 6 years. In the first year, we are seeking contact with others through touch, taste, smell, hearing, and seeing our primary caregiver. So cuddles, physical contact, and closeness with our primary caregiver is essential for us. In the second year, we try to hold on to our attachment figures through imitation, copying, and mimicking their behaviors and actions. We develop a collection of characteristics, a sameness to people we are attached to. In the third year, we just want to belong and be loyal to people we are attached to and will do a lot to avoid separation. In our fourth year, we want to be seen as significant, as special, and we long for approval and to be heard. If all these previous stages went very well, then age 5 is the time where we can show signs of deep love, caring, tenderness, and compassion. Some even want to marry everyone in the family. At age 6, then, we ideally are deeply attached to someone with whom it is safe to share our inner world with. We then have someone who knows us for who we are. And that will allow us to grow as a separate, yet deeply connected and self-confident person. If, however, we did not find a safe environment during one or more of these stages, or also if we made other traumatic experiences later in life, then we don't feel either safe because we already experienced an unsafe environment, or a caretaker that wasn't able to meet our needs, or we feel insecure as we were not fully invited as the person we were and had to edit ourselves to fit the expectations. If that happened, then this has, of course, a huge impact on our ability to form healthy relationships with other people later in life. We might also develop shame, anger, or anxiety problems, or we decide to not feel anything any longer and dissociate, which is basically a freeze reaction. Insecure, unhealthy relationship styles are, for example, chronic caretaking, controlling, people-pleasing, or people who are overly dependent or independent, and some people develop narcissistic tendencies. Insecure attached people will often either set their boundaries too early or too late. And having a certain pattern will usually draw a specific pattern in our partners towards us. Controller, for example, often choose pleaser, dependents, or narcissistic people as their partners. Chronic caretaker often form relationships with overly dependent or independent people, or with people with narcissistic tendencies. Independents, on the other hand, often choose other independents, pleaser or controller, and the people with grandiose narcissistic tendencies prefer either pleaser or other narcissistic people, mostly the depressed narcissist. But this is, of course, just a rough overview and is by no means complete. And these patterns don't only show up in relationships with other people, but also in the relationship with our horse. And therefore, I would like to say a few words about 3 of these styles: the chronic caretaker, the pleaser, and the controller, as these are patterns that can often be found among horse owners. A chronic caretaker is a person who tries to help and aim for harmony and always wants to make things better. They feel good when they can take care of someone or something, or organize and rescue the helpless as this gives them the feeling of being needed and important. Chronic caretakers often buy very young, very old, or rescue horses. And however nice and well-meaning that might be, a chronic caretaker can enmesh in the life of others to a point of taking complete control over the life of the ones they take care of. They also often have weak boundaries for themselves and for others. Chronic caretakers often neglect their own physical and emotional health because they are so focused on caring for someone else, often for people or animals who don't actually need that support or not anymore. Chronic caretaking can lead to physical, mental, and emotional exhaustion, and many struggle with anxiety and repressed anger. If you find yourself in this description, it is important to find a balance between your need to help others and to take care of yourself. You can then gently ask yourself some questions. For example, who in your past needed your help? And was it okay to ask for your help, or was this an overreach, maybe from a parent? Or another question, what did you need to do to get help? When was a time where you needed help but nobody showed up for you? Do you also take maybe too much care of your horse? Do you maybe pet it too much? Just feel into your energy while you're petting it. Horses of chronic caretaker are often pushy, so always set clear boundaries. If it is the same with people, explain them that you fully trust them that they can do certain tasks themselves, step by step. When you think more you mentor rather than doing things for others, it can help them to find their own strengths and power. And yes, this is easier said than done, because there's a very good reason you develop that pattern, and of course, this can't be changed overnight. But later a few more words about how this can be done, not overnight, but step by step on your journey to yourself. Now a few words about the pleasing personality. A pleaser is very empathetic and has a talent for finding emotionally unavailable people and hopes that they prove their worthiness. They're avoiding relationships where love is free because it doesn't feel earned. Pleasers were often controlled through shame or strong boundaries, or were completely on his or her own. Now they try to keep peace at all costs. The difference to a chronic caretaker is that they don't enmesh in other people's life as much, but they go above and beyond to do everything they can to make other people happy, up to a point where they, themselves, don't even know anymore what they like and what they just do for others. People-pleasing is also extremely exhausting, because the constant scanning of other people and their wishes leave almost no room for authenticity. Shame, insecurity, anxiety, helplessness, repressed anger are some of the emotions that are playing a big role for pleaser. Pleaser first need to find themselves, figure out who they really are, what they really like. They need to deeply understand that they are enough just as they are, that they don't need approval or other people to be complete. They also often need to learn to set boundaries and to endure and deal with conflicts. That is also true for the relationship with their horses. A person now who develops a controlling relationship style was usually controlled him or herself, often through shame and guilt, or through too strict boundaries, or they were completely left on their own. Now, this person needs to control others to feel safe and secure. Controller don't trust that others can achieve goals without reinforcement, and they often believe that others don't love them for who they are and that they have to be successful to be enough. They have problems accepting boundaries and enmesh in others' lives. Although control is the actual goal in horse training, it is actually based on fear. Fear that if we don't control the other being, they might not do what we want, which could mean they turn away from us and our wishes and needs. Anger, shame, insecurity, and anxiety are emotions controllers often struggle with, although they often seem to be very strong and self-confident from the outside. If you find yourself a bit in this description, you can gently ask yourself a few questions. For example, who in your life made mistakes you had to suffer from? Who wasn't able to handle life, but you depended on that person and their actions? Or also, who judged you when you made mistakes? Who left you alone when you would have needed help? Controllers have the hard task on their journey to learn to accept that everyone makes mistakes, and that mistakes are inevitable and therefore perfectly normal and okay, and that they're a sign that we are trying. They're an opportunity to learn. We also always need to remember that everyone is doing the best they can with the tools they have at that moment. Learning to trust yourself always comes first. Then, through this, you will be able to learn to trust others as well, and to see that they don't necessarily leave when we don't control them. And if so, that is probably then the best that can happen. Also, trust your horse, it can do it, even if it can't in the beginning. Be its role model. It will become confident with time. And always be patient with yourself. A very important thing to recognize in all of this, and that might come as a surprise, especially when we often talk to ourselves in a negative way, that all our thoughts, behaviors, and patterns are a sign of self-love. We do that to protect ourselves, because we like to continue to exist. Yes, it's unhealthy self-love, yet it is a good sign. All we have to do now is to transform the unhealthy love into a healthy one. And all that this takes is a lifelong journey. Okay, pretty long, but also rewarding. Okay, and now, what we can actually do to continue to heal and to develop a healthy love for ourselves after we manage the first two steps, which was recognizing that there is some self-healing to do, and after we understand intellectually where our unhealthy approach is coming from, is to follow a two-way approach. The first, and what I think the most important one, is the so-called bottom-up approach. These are body-centered techniques like mindfulness, yoga, shaking practice, tai chi dancing, singing, and of course, spending time in nature, for example, doing an adventure walk with the horse. The reason why these techniques are so effective is that our emotions are not stored in the part of the brain that is responsible for executive functioning and rational thinking, but in the emotional part, the amygdala. And through these body-centered techniques, we can access information stored in the part of the brain where the emotions are also stored. And the second approach is the top-down approach, which are cognitive or talk therapy approaches. These are also very helpful. It's about to be heard and learning about acceptance, setting boundaries, and peaceful communication, to become able to independently fulfill all our needs and to accept the need of others. A podcast can, of course, just be a short insight, a starting point to become aware of how much our own unconscious thoughts, behaviors, and patterns influence even the relationship with our horses. And that's why peaceful togetherness with our horses will in turn lead to more healthy relationships with other people and with ourselves as well. All this will be the subject of my course, You and Me. This course will not only accompany you on your own healing journey, but also give you valuable tools to help your horse heal from trauma, anxiety, anger, and feelings of helplessness. So, this was the last of my podcast episodes in my 1 year series. It was a real pleasure to do all of them, and I hope they were helpful for you and your horse. And now, have a wonderful day with your horse.